This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. How did I talk to the sleep addict?
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN Game Scoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week are Sam Claiborne.
Hey, hey, hey.
And Justin Davis.
Scoop.
Triple scoop. We've got a great show for you this week. We'll be sharing our most anticipated games of the year. There are some upcoming events to get excited for, like the Xbox Dev Direct next week, that we'll finally get to see this Indiana Jones game. And Game Shark.
Woo.
Game Shark, of all places, think they know when the Switch 2 is coming out. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
As well in just a bit. But first, IGN's review of Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown went up today. Our reviewer liked it a lot, gave it an 8 out of 10, and both Sam and I have also been playing it, and we both also like it a lot. I think Sam's played more than me. I'm probably around 8 hours in. But yeah, this is the first Prince of Persia game in a long time, and it's the first Metroidvania, 2D Metroidvania Prince of Persia game, and it works really well. Sam, I wonder if you agree with me. I think it starts off a little slowly. There's kind of there's like a tutorial bit you have to play through. But once you sort of get let loose in Mount Koff, I think is what it is, and just actually start exploring and you know learning new combat abilities, it gets to be really fun. It's a really well-made Metroidvania. Not on the level of Symphony of the Night. Let's just manage people's expectations. But it's a very good Metroidvania. Sam, what do you think?
Not on the level is one of the literally best video games ever made all time.
Just to know, I want people to know what level of quality we're talking about here.
Sure.
You know what non-Symphony games and non-Castlevania games are missing is really that enemy drop stuff where it's like you can farm crazy gear from enemies.
Yeah.
You know, Metroid doesn't do that either, right? So it's like that's a Castlevania thing, and that's really been missing because this game is a really competent, but more like Metroid game than Castlevania.
Yeah.
But the combat, and it's more like the last Metroid game because it's a lot of sliding and stuff like that, but it's all sword combat and special attacks. There's a bow also. But it's such a good balance of exploration and kind of difficult moments. And it really, really, really is good at that. Oof, I need to get to the next save point, but I'm really not doing great right now. However, if you die in this game, you don't lose a bunch of stuff. You lose like a few pieces of money, the crystals, and then you get warped back to a save point. So there is not as much risk as there was in the classic, Metroid and Castlevania games where it's like, well, if I don't get to this next thing, then if I die, then I lose all the progress and maybe even the cool random droppables I have.
Yeah.
But all that aside, I'm just making comparisons. I'm not saying this is a bad game. It is so fun. It's really good. It looks really good at many times, despite like I think how it previewed and how like kind of it looks kind of, I don't know, at times generic and crappy in 3D. But like there's really cool moments of backgrounds being used and like a sense of scale that's used to that emphasizes that there's a bigger world behind the little tiny, map rectangles that you see when you pause the game, because it has a really classic map. You totally play the game based on the map. It's a Metroid and Castlevania like game that like is made by people that love those games. Clearly, like they studied up and it's so good.
Yeah, it's a very classic style game. It's so classic. They actually provided reviewers with this review guide, which is kind of a thing that used to happen very often and doesn't happen very much anymore, but it's like this lengthy, like 50-page doc of like explaining the lore of the game and then giving strategy tips on how to beat bosses and all that stuff. It's just kind of refreshing and charming to see that again.
One thing that I like about the combat is that you can either zoom over somebody, slide under them, or parry them, and there's certain things that aren't parryable. And a lot of games have that now, right? But a lot of games took a page from the original Dark Souls, and they're doing these Souls-like games, which are, they really slow down the combat. Like, you can roll, and you can sword and board, and, like, get in. Like, you can learn boss fights and stuff, but the parrying always sucks for me in those games because it's so slow. I really don't like that. That doesn't work for me. In this game, it seems, well, maybe it's just forgiving, but I'm good at parrying this game, and I really like it. And Metroid is like that, too. The last Metroid, they gave you that kind of upswipe parry, and it kind of changes the dynamics of a fight, and it might give you special skills based on what you have equipped, because you can equip equipment that it's like, if you parry this, you get this reward, and it's like, it's awesome. It's really, really cool, and like the parrying of enemies feels good in this game, and yeah, I just wanted to call that out because it's unusual.
Yeah, lots of cool.
What like a perfect January game, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I agree.
So the original Prince of Persia is like a slow and plodding platformer. I love it, but you know, it's the follow-up to Karateka, and then would go, you know, it's the ancestor of things like Flashback and Out of This World, and then Tomb Raider, I think, even, where you have to plan your jumps very, very precisely. There's no room for error, and you're trying to avoid traps and pitfalls like swinging blades and spikes and all that. So what's cool is that some of that DNA is still in this game, and just there are lots of platforming obstacles like swinging blades and spike pits that you have to watch out for and that sort of thing. But then,
I noticed that in addition to that, there's Sands of Time DNA in it, which I think is really cool. There's like some mystery to be solved about time and like why some people are appearing in different ways than others. And there's like a really, I like that part a bit. And then you can get some upgrades and stuff that allow you to do a little bit of time shifty stuff. And it's great. Like that's neat that that's part of Prince of Persia, but only because of that really great, you know, GameCube era game.
Yeah. Yeah. In this map, there's all sorts of NPCs that are not enemies that you can speak to. And in this location, time is just moving differently for everybody, it seems like. So there's kind of a mystery there, too. And I think one of the coolest features are the map photos. I don't know if there's like an official name for them, Sam, but like...
Oh, my gosh.
Like in,
they're all memories.
In like in Breath of the Wild, when you see something interesting you want to check out, you can just put a little icon on your map. But in Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown, you actually take a photo of that area, and it's always there on your map. So no matter where you are, you can also or just revisit that photo. And maybe a puzzle that you've just solved you know, in another part of the map unlocks or makes you realize, oh, that's what I had to do at this other spot, and you can verify it and then make your way back there. It's a great feature that more games should use.
Fantastic Metroid upgrade, right? Like, that's so smart to do that. And what's great is that it's, you may be like, well, that's maybe, you know, you should just be taking your own notes and doing this, and that makes the game easier. But like, there's a game element to that, because you can expand your stash of those. But you do run out of them.
Yeah.
And when you run out, you start realizing like, oh, I left a bunch of these around like litter. That's fine. Clean those up and reuse them. But some you're like, well, this is obviously like a passage that ends in a blank space that I have to jump up high to. So I don't really need one there. I'll just remember that. I start like playing all these like psychological games about conserving that skill. And I just thought that's so clever.
Yeah.
And like, I'm in the meat of it right now. I'm in like maybe the fourth area out of like looks like 10 or 12 or something like that, you know, of the themes, because you know these games have like the gross place with ooze, and then like you're in the sky for a little bit. It's very old school in that way. And you know, the connections to get back to where you're going in this game are like a little bit sparse. There are fast travel points, and then there's a few other things that help you get around, like a central elevator. But like, I've definitely got to points where I'm like, I'm too annoyed to go back and do this like collectible right now. I'm going to wait until I have a few more power-ups. And then I'll like hit a combat wall. I'm like, fine, I'll just do a whole sweep and get as much stuff as possible. It takes me forever. Like last night, I was going through parts I'd been through just backtracking, but like I enjoyed every minute of it.
Yeah.
If that type of gameplay is not for everybody. Wow. So what I'm seeing right now explains a lot, actually. I didn't know that you could get that grapple hook.
Yeah.
That explains so much about this room that I was in for a long time last night.
Yeah, there's good traversal stuff in here. And I have to thank Sam. Sam was providing me with some late night game help last night. I was completely stuck, had no idea how to go forward. I was texting Sam, and I texted him a photo of my map, and then he was able to show me, no, you need to go to this room and work your way up, and big help.
You know, if you're an IGN Plus subscriber, you can text Sam your game help questions anytime, and he'll get back to you on it.
That's a good plus up. I like it.
Justin, you like a good Metroidvania. Are you going to play Prince of Persia?
Yeah, I mean, so yes, as I was saying, I think it's a perfect January game, right? Like, it's exactly well-timed when it's released. You know, Super Metroid and Symphony of the Night are my number one and number two favorite games ever of all time. So yes, extremely excited to dive into The Lost Crown. I've seen some feedback from folks, you know, and whatever, everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but they're just kind of like Metroidvania'd out, right? Mm. They're like, yeah. You know, like, I've had a lot of that kind of game. And like, my response to that would be like, there's not like, okay, yes, there's been a billion of these games, but not that many of them have been like great. Like,
that's
true. How many truly great Metroidvanias have there been? Like, the last one was probably Metroid Dread, right? Yeah, and probably. Like, that was what, 2+ years ago? So like, you know, I think we're due. And just the amount of care and thought, like, they went so hard on this game, and like, this game could have easily have been kind of like this forgettable 2D Prince of Persia. And like, you know, the amount of care and TLC that went into it so far exceeds that, you know, just clearly that, like, I'm very, very excited to play.
Plus, this and Metroid are like, I used to really be anti 3D usage for these games, mm-hmm. but like, this and Metroid are just really good, and they're doing their own thing. It makes me a little bit wistful for the, you know, will there ever be great 2D pixel looking yeah. Metroidvanias? And there are, like, Axiom Verge 2 looked really good, and it had that style, but it did not draw me in like this game. So yes, you're totally right. There's other Metroidvanias, there's a lot of them out there, but like, I'm telling you guys, this one is a higher quality than most. So yeah. Maybe you can limit your intake to your eights and aboves, you know? Which is good for lots of things.
It's funny that Justin mentions the TLC that went into this game, because there's one tiny little aspect that could have used a little bit more scrutiny. Have you heard about this, Justin?
Yeah, are you going to talk about the voice acting?
Yeah, there's a very very small NPC character where their dialogue is not a human. It's an AI text-to-speech converter, and Ubisoft has confirmed this. I wouldn't have ever noticed it because it's apparently used by it's a text-to-service program that's used by streamers a lot, and I don't watch any streamers, so I would have never heard this voice, but someone who was playing it internally recognized it. Are you more clued into this than I am, Sam?
Well, only that somebody recognized it, flagged it to a news member of our team. And then on the guides team, one of the people playing it got in there and was like, oh yeah, I immediately recognized that voice from Twitch streams. Yeah. Because I was wondering, like, well, if it's just like a robot voice, this has really been around forever. And like, I don't know, like, I didn't really know what to expect. But yeah, it's because this is so commonly used as like a fill-in thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's a lot of it's a little bit like egg on your face, like, type of situation, because they just left in a placeholder.
That's the intriguing part about this story to me, is Ubisoft's response was they owned up to it. Yeah. And they said, look, as part of the game development process, you have placeholder assets all the time, which is completely true, right? Like, so they had this placeholder text to speech, and then they said, you know, the company doing the voice acting, it was a third party, it was a contractor, and you know, it's a mistake. Like, the placeholder text to speech didn't get replaced with the actual voice actor, and we'll patch it in. And you know, that's plausible. So is this an honest mistake, or is this like, or is this Ubisoft getting caught, right? Like, can we do an AI voice for this minor NPC and see if anyone notices?
Yeah,
like,
because we know that that's coming.
I don't know
what
the answer is.
We know that that's coming.
Right. Yeah,
in the very near future, there's going to be a lot of AI voices in our games.
While all of these facts remain true, like, there's already AI voices that are freaking amazing.
Yeah,
that completely can fool you if you don't live with a celebrity. They can sound exactly like a celebrity. So like, this did not sound like that. This sounded like crappy, you know, just text to speech, which has been around for 50 years. And honestly, it's used in all sorts of accessibility stuff. So like, let's be real here. Like, we need to draw a line. Like, replacing actors is upsetting. Providing, you know, text to speech is probably really good for developers, and also good for a huge community of people that need text to speech.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's hard to get down in it. However, also, and besides that, it's also really recognizable text to speech that sounds like crap. So it's like, one person was like, this sounds like crap. And then another person was like, this, I know what this is, it's from this. So even if it was like trying to pull the wool over our eyes, they could have just picked like a voice that sounded like much, much better. You know, it's just funny. Like, let's see if we can get away with that. It already would be better than this, I think, is my overall point.
Yeah.
We wouldn't know.
But then in the credits, there's no voice actor credited for this character, which that's why it seems like It seems like they didn't record the dialogue and then forget to put it in. It seems like they just forgot to record the dialogue at all. Because I think there's only eight lines of dialogue that this character has.
It's weird. It's a weird story.
Is it one of the trees?
Yeah, one of the tree spirits.
I haven't played the game myself yet. It's very much a Justin game. I'm so excited that it turned out great. It's a little bit of a shame. Like, this is real news. I'm glad that we reported on it and that other people are. But, like, I don't want it to overshadow, like, hey, there's this really, really good Prince of Persia Metroidvania game out right now.
Of course.
But it is just bizarre, right?
It is weird. The other thing is that in that reviewer's guide, it lists out everything that's coming with the day one patch. And this fix wasn't in there, so I don't know. It doesn't seem like they just forgot to record the dialogue for this one small character, but they're gonna update it in a patch coming later this month, I believe. So, and anyone out there who's interested in this game or Metroidvania should not at all let that keep you from playing the game. It's great. It's out January 18th, next Thursday, and it's $50. It's a little bit more of a budget price there.
That's surprising to me. I actually didn't know the price. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is a little high. I mean, that's a very privileged, these games take teams of hundreds of artists and animators and programmers to make. So it's like $50 is reasonable, but that's more than like, I don't know, if you're like, Justin, what would you guess the MSRP of this game is? I probably would have said $30.
Speaking of January 18th, that's when the Xbox Dev Direct is being held. We're finally going to get to see this Indiana Jones game, which might be called Indiana Jones and the Great Circle, which is not a great name, but also not worse than Dial of Destiny, I suppose.
What do you mean? It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. But these, like, Raiders of the Lost Ark and Temple of Doom are awesome names.
Yeah. Okay. You're right. Okay. I rescind my. I'm just used to Indiana Jones and the Thing. You know. It's like whatever. Yeah. Who cares?
Yeah. Sure. But I'm excited. I'm excited to finally see this because there's so many. First of all, there's reasons to be excited. It's Machine Games. It's the Wolfenstein team. Mm-hmm. They've done great work in recent years. Also, the recent Quake games. So that is a reason enough alone to be excited. But also, it's just there's so many questions like. A game based on a famous character like this, you would expect to be third person, but they mostly make first person games, so we don't know what the game's going to look like. And then it's like, what's Indiana Jones going to look like? And what's it going to sound like?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, can they use any likeness or anything to match it to Harrison Ford, or is it just going to be Indiana Jones?
Is it gonna be like
maybe it's somebody else.
Is it a James Bond scenario where it's the character, not the same actor?
It is tough, you know. It's like Marvel's Avengers from Square Enix had this sort of like, you know, they were called the knockoff Avengers because they made their own take on the MCU Avengers, but were very close to the MCU Avengers. Yeah. And like, it's tough. It's like they either need to make someone that's very different from Harrison Ford or get a sound alike, right? Those are like, they can't have someone that's like close to that. So.
What if it's only in first person and a silent protagonist?
Yeah.
I mean, sure.
You just completely skip that. You just see the hat go on, like obscuring your face as it goes on.
I mean, I think like Machine Games has like never made a bad game though, right? So it's like they've earned the benefit of the doubt from me, certainly. Yeah. Anything that they make, it's like...
Maybe an okay game, which was the Wolfenstein spinoff, Youngblood, I think.
That was Youngblood was really good. I mean, you know, it kind of came and went. It didn't make like a cultural splash, but it was a good video game.
Two was the one with the insane decapitation plot, right?
Yes.
That was the wildest shit.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. So there's a couple things that this team is not afraid to do to be like completely, you know, supernaturally weird with World War II technology, right? Mm-hmm. That is Indiana Jones's like bread and butter, except for Temple of Doom, which is a prequel. The other cool thing about them is that they do this thing in Wolfenstein where there's a hub with a bunch of sympathetic and interesting characters that like does not need to be in a first person shooter game, but they kicked butt at that. So I'm thinking like, whoa, like how cool is that for your like architectural dig site or you know, whatever it is, like indie as a team, like indie does not work alone. And like, yeah. it'll, that could be a really cool mode for them to be in.
I hope he has a little monkey sidekick, like the robot that they've shown off in Star Wars Outlaws, where it's like, hey, go over there and like trip that switch.
Yes.
The monkey turned out to be a Nazi.
Yeah,
that's true. But
bad dates.
Yeah, he got his
bad dates. He did. Yeah. Poor monkey. He didn't know.
he does a little sigile. It's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy.
So stupid. That whole Cairo sequence in Raiders of the Lost Ark is like, it's more remarkable the more you read about it, because it's like, they did so much location filming, and like one of those scenes has like 300 extras like digging an architectural site, and like that's like more amazing to me than like a CG spaceship by so much. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
Yep. Perfect movie.
Ah, there we go.
Here we go.
There you go. We've got that.
This is in the pinball machine. You have to find the monkey, and it goes in baskets, and each basket either has Marion or the monkey or like a snake in it. And those are the shots on the pinball machine. So you go left to right. And then all of a sudden the knife guy comes out, and there's an Easter egg. You can either play a little bit more, or you can just pull the gun trigger and it actually kills the knife guy, because the gun trigger is the shooter rod. Cool. On the game.
That's great.
Yeah. It's really, it's really, really clever.
It's crazy that a movie from 1980 can look this good still. Like, we're just looking at HD footage on YouTube here. I'm just like, this movie looks so good.
Yeah, it's just lit so well, and everybody looks sweaty like they did in the 70s, you know? It's just perfect.
Yeah. Harrison Ford is also like, you know, he's like 29 when they filmed this, yet for some reason he looks like he's like 45.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Everybody
and
in
now
the 70s.
He's like 105 and he looks like he's 70.
You see a picture of high school students in the 70s and they just look like old men. It's so weird.
I know.
He was blessed with this body.
Cigarettes, man.
Yeah. Anyway, I think I'm really excited to see the game. Hopefully we've got like a Star Wars Jedi situation where Lucasfilm just gave a great developer the reins to their IP and let them make something really cool with it. Like, how many, it's inevitable. Even though these games copied Indiana Jones, people are going to be looking for like connections with Uncharted and Tomb Raider.
I know. And I hope it could be whatever they choose to be. It could be interesting, but like, it would be really interesting if it was like a Tomb Raider like, right?
Yeah.
Or Uncharted like, either of those, which are really similar. And Tomb Raider got some good stuff going for it. Then Uncharted did too, with the open areas. Uncharted did like one big open area per game for the last two games, including the 1.5 one or 4.5 one. I really liked the Tomb Raider situation last time. It was like these like huge open worldy areas. Like, they did a really good job with that. Yeah. I loved it.
It is interesting. Like, what is like Indiana Jones game? It's a no brainer. It's like, I don't know that it is a no brainer. It's like, what's this game's primary verb going to be? Like, the primary verb in Uncharted is shooting. And like, that's not really Indiana Jones, right? Like, he uses guns plenty, but like, I don't know. We'll see. I'm curious to learn more.
Yeah. I hope it's like tomb type stuff and infiltration. I think it'd be really neat if it was like, Nazi bases or something, and you had to like Metal Gear them. Like, that'd be amazing, right?
Yes.
Well, the good news is that this direct happens on at noon next Thursday, so we'll be able to talk about it on this very show next week.
Cool.
Game Shark is not a name I've heard in a long time, but apparently Game Shark still exists. It's as Shark AI, but they're bringing the Game Shark brand back with some kind of a device. It's not for codes, Sam, sorry. It's for, it like watches you play your game and in real time, analyzes your playing and will make, I don't know, suggestions, or will tweak the AI of the game. I'm not really sure. It's supposed to help you play your game, but it's aimed at a more casual audience. And in a press release today, they said that they're going to launch it in September alongside Switch 2.
I have a theory about this, Damon.
Okay.
And then obviously IGN and everyone else wrote this up as news. Like, did GameSharp just leak the? And then, you know, they quickly put out a statement that's like, we're just guessing.
Yeah.
we're just guessing that the Switch 2. So I think they knew exactly what they were doing.
Yep.
Okay. How many people were aware that Shark AI existed and this product existed and that Game Shark was back? And so I think that they very much were like, yes, we're launching alongside the Switch 2 in September.
And then, this is a great conspiracy.
Yeah. And then 6 to 8 hours later, we're like, oh, no, we don't know when the Switch 2 is coming out. It's just a game. I think it's absolutely deliberate and manufactured on their part.
Hmm. I like it.
That, typical Game Shark.
That would be pretty... I mean, that's a hack. That's what Game Shark is all about, right? Hacking your game.
That's right. They hacked the media.
That was, you know...
Do you remember the...
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say, do you remember the last time we all used a Game Shark together? I got the Star Fox code
working in Ocarina
of Time using the Game Shark in the office. That, like, I would have, like, you know, 99% called that mythological. Mm-hmm. But it was real.
Yep. An R-Wing comes and shoots Link with lasers. It's crazy. Yep. I was going to say, like, the last time I think I saw that this particular hack used was when Gollum was the very first PS5 game ever announced. Lord of the Rings Gollum.
Yeah,
I mean, the PlayStation 5.
They just put the PS5 logo on the trailer or something.
And then they were the first confirmed next-gen game.
Not the logo. Yeah. Brilliant.
Gilbert, if you have that ad for Game Shark that we're going to put in the fix, if you can bring that up, I think everyone would enjoy it. Game Shark started in the 90s, right? Like mid-90s?
It was after Game Genie.
Yeah.
And they definitely tackled the 64 Game Boy Advance era.
Yeah.
I do. So, you know, I think that they knew what they were doing. I think it was a deliberate move on their part to get themselves in the news. But I think that September is a completely plausible launch window for the Switch 2. I think that the Switch 2 has probably been basically ready for a long time. So I don't think there's any need for them to wait till, like, you know, November, Black Friday, Thanksgiving. I think they can launch the console earlier than that. I think that Switch sales have fallen off, so Nintendo is motivated to get their new console out there. Mm-hmm. They announced the original Switch in January, and then it came out in March. So not for nothing, but that was the time frame of that console. Who knows?
I think it was October that they announced, but then in January they did a big direct, and that's where they showed
You're right. So they announced it, and then January was like pre-orders. Like, here's what the game launch games are, and so on and so forth. Then it came out in March.
So we should see if Galoob is available, so we could maybe invest in Game Genie and bring that back. And I recommend saying it'll, you know, align perfectly with the PlayStation 6 in November 2027. But before that, it'd be really fun to make tiny Game Genies for the Nintendo Switch that look, you know, they're just the perfect cartridge that you put the cartridge slot in and it goes in the back of your Switch.
Ooh.
Sticks out.
I like that. Stop and swap for the N64.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and you know, Game Shark did a stop and swap type thing because they had the discs that I never tried. I kind of missed that cheating era. But yeah, you'd buy like a PS1 or 2 disc and like open up your machine and like swap it in somehow.
I used to do that playing Final Fantasy VII.
There it is.
Do you do it while the game is... Oh, what is this?
Friends don't let friends play unprotected.
Oh, yeah. What is in there?
It's a package that looks like a condom package, but inside it's not a condom. It's a Game Shark card.
Wow. Just unhinged video game ads.
1997.
Mm-hmm.
Doing whatever they wanted.
Yeah.
Video games aren't a crime.
Yeah, so how it worked in Final Fantasy VII was the PS1 would basically load the entire game or whatever, like the entire area. Like if you were in a town, the whole town was loaded. And like it was more of like a party trick than anything. But you could open up your PS1, take the entire disc out. You could put in a music CD and start playing your own music. And then you were still playing Final Fantasy VII as long as you were in the overworld or in that town or wherever you were. The whole game was loaded into the console memory at the time.
Do you think that's how Game Shark operated? I can't remember if you put it beforehand.
I never had one.
You know,
but I would imagine it worked off the same basic principles. It was loading something into memory that was then stored there, and then you could swap discs. I don't know.
Do you remember there was a whole class of Nintendo 64 cheating, which involved just moving the cartridge up a little bit on the side?
You could move. It was insane. It was one of those like street yard things that, you know, again, schoolyard things that sounds fake of like, no, pull the corner of the cart up just a tiny bit so that one or two pins are not hooked.
Yeah.
And then it could enable all these cheats and codes. It was nuts.
Yeah, I remember. I think you had to do that with the Zelda one where you could roll through this seam and kind of complete this. You get into like the Sun and Moon area at the very end of Majora's Mask's like most difficult fetch quest.
Yeah.
That was like one that I remember doing. It was great.
The other kind of like urban legend, but true, was when the Xbox 360 Red Ring of Death was happening to everybody. There was people would talk about this. Wrap your console in a towel. Mm-hmm. Wrap it in a towel, and then it'll fix it. It'll work again.
Yeah.
And that was
true. It did.
Yeah, because the Red Ring of Death was caused by
glue.
The glue, and then it was helping, your console would get so hot that it would help reset the glue and melt the thermal paste or whatever it was.
Can you imagine? Idea was to the problem is heat, but the solution is heat.
Yeah. Yeah, because whatever connection had come loose there by not enough thermal paste or too much or whatever, getting it really hot fixed that for some folks.
Mm-hmm. Three-Eyed Lights, our first Xbox podcast name.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
A nice troll. And Nintendo voice chat was a troll name too, because Nintendo wouldn't put voice chat on the Wii.
Yep.
Yeah.
Why are we trolling these companies?
Okay, you guys ready? Galoob was founded in 1957 by Louis and Barbara Galoob. The Galoobs.
That's
Yeah.
Man, that's a cool last name.
The Galoob fortune.
The Galoob. Well, not really so much anymore. In 1998, Hasbro purchased Galoob for $220 million. And now Hasbro uses a Galoob on a brand name on some of its toys.
Well, that makes sense because Galoob did do Micro Machines, so I'm sure that brand name, exists still.
Huh. Cool.
Well, if you ever meet a Galoob, you can ask, any relation?
I mean, the answer is almost certainly yes.
Yep. Micro Machines!
When it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the U.S., That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month. And one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop.
Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like...
Oh, no.
Big Tony style. No.
Big Tony style.
Who says, Happy New Year. Great to hear the crew back in form last week. After a strong 2023, the new year is a little unknown in comparison, but it will no doubt bring some high-quality games. I'm mainly excited for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, but there isn't much else announced that has my full attention, which is okay because Little Tony Style has created quite a backlog of 2023 games. I'm curious, what are the Omega Cops most looking forward to playing in the new year?
Oh, God.
We actually all
By the way, I want to point out...
What? Go ahead.
Just one YouTube comment that I read a while back was like, guys, stop being so naive. Big Tony Style obviously doesn't exist. It's just whatever... It's like fake questions that Damon wants to read off for us to discuss. Mm-hmm. And I want to say to that commenter, I've met him. He exists. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
In the flesh.
Most anticipated games. The problem that I have is I live and breathe video games. I do video game stuff for a living. I work at IGN. But when someone says, hey, Justin, name a video game, my mind just goes blank and I can't.
Well,
I can't.
It's a good thing we all made those playlists.
I'm opening up my playlist app right now. Let me see.
I have, my, I have mine ready to go as well. Who wants to go first? I can go first.
Go for it.
Let's see, I'm going to put them in alphabetical order. Here we go. My games are Dragon's Dogma 2.
I was going to name that one.
Yeah, sure. It's okay. There can be some overlap. I liked Dragon's Dogma 1 well enough, and I'm excited for 2. Like a Dragon, Infinite Wealth, which is coming later this month on my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully I can finish up Prince of Persia before then. Mario versus Donkey Kong, the remake. I love the original game. I love puzzle games.
Oh, there's a trailer this week for that. It was really good. Today, did you see they're adding levels?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see that.
There's more stuff.
Cool. That's awesome.
It looks like Donkey Kong, you know, Donkey Kong style, more stuff too. They also added like co-op somehow. How do you just add co-op?
It makes no sense.
They're like these intricate puzzles.
Well, I mean, all you got to do is collect the 3 things on each level. So I don't think that would cause too much problem. Shadow of the Ninja.
There's also like a no pain mode.
Shadow of the Ninja Reborn, which is a remake of the NES cult classic Shadow of the Ninja, and I just found out it's being made by like the original team that made the NES game, and this is true. The average age of the development team is 55.
I don't mean to laugh. Obviously there's many video game veterans,
cool.
But it's like, hey, do you want to make a sequel to a game we made 30 years ago? Yeah, let's do it. Whatever.
It's going to sell literally tens of copies. It's going to be great. Yeah, I will be one of them. Star Wars Outlaws, that might be my most anticipated game of the year. I like I actually like the Ubisoft formula. I'm playing a Ubisoft game right now that I like, and I like Star Wars, so everything should work out with that one. I'm excited for Tomb Raider 1-3 Remastered. I know that Justin said I should keep my expectations in check, but I haven't played those games since they were released, so I'm excited to at least revisit them, see how they hold up. And then Stellar Blade, which is like a Bayonetta Devil May Cry like character action game, which isn't really my genre, but it just looks so good. If it actually looks the way it does in the trailer, it'll be one of the best looking video games ever made. And that's being published by Sony. Those are my 7 for right now.
All right, I finally got my playlist up here. I had to pick so many bridges to get into that capture. It was like unbelievable. That's my most, I'm looking forward to that most in 2024 is the bridge CAPTCHA. All right, so I have Dragon Age Dreadwolf, which I believe will be this year. Mm. Dragon's Dogma 2, mm-hmm. which you already mentioned.
Only Dragon games.
Yep.
Yeah, only Dragon games. Star Wars Outlaws, Prince of Persia, which I'm already playing. I have Hollow Knight Silk Song on here, which I hope will be this year. I'm looking forward to Princess Peach Showtime, mm-hmm. which is the weird Peach spinoff coming. And then I don't know which one of these is going to come first. I think people do know the answer to this, but either Assassin's Creed Codename Red or Assassin's Creed Codename Hex. One of those is happening this year.
But which ones are those?
In my opinion. Well, I think one is supposed to be like some kind of, one's Japan. Right.
One is Japan is Codename Red and Codename Hex is the witches one, right?
Yeah, it's like supposedly like maybe like medieval Witcher type stuff. Hmm.
Yeah, the witchcraft one.
That both sound great. Why not both? And then I have Final Fantasy VII and then Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door. Why not?
Yeah.
Yeah. The best Paper Mario.
Never played that game.
Oh man, you're gonna love it. It's the best one.
Cool.
Just look it up.
Do you think Indiana Jones will be this year too? I have other games.
I mean, that's the rumor.
It could be. Ryan McCaffrey thinks it could very well be this year.
Yeah, and then Metal Gear Solid Delta, I'm vaguely interested in. Visions of Mana, did you see that? It's like a pretty neat looking reboot of the Mana series. We don't think Blade is this year, right? We don't think Grand Theft Auto is this year.
No, Blade was announced.
Oh, here's another one. Have you guys seen the cozy game Tales of the Shire?
No.
Yes.
It looks awesome. It's like a Shire set Harvest Moon.
Yeah. Such a good idea for a game. I hope that there's no conflict of any kind. It's just delivering pies to people and brewing ale. That's all I need.
Hopefully it's after the events of the Third Age or way before them.
Yeah,
although way
say.
Before them, they were getting hassled so much that the Dúnedain had to protect them. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, they have a window of time in which they can hit and make this game as like cozy and nice as they can.
Wait, is this like a licensed mm-hmm. Middle Earth game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Cool.
So it was Return to Moria, and like I had big hopes for that game, but
yeah, right. This one's going to be better than that, I think.
Excited.
I have a few that haven't been named. Yep. I'm really, really excited about Stormgate. That is an upcoming real-time strategy game from a lot of former StarCraft II developers. They left Blizzard and formed a studio called Frost Giant. And
it's Unreal 5.
Everything... What's that?
It's Unreal Engine 5.
Yeah, I mean, everything that they're saying about this RTS is like, you know, what they're going to do to, you know, rollback netcode and responsive netcode and gameplay and how they're going to treat sort of casual play versus an esport. Like, they're like, you know, look, is the game going to turn out great? I don't know. But like, they're ticking every single box of like, they know exactly what to say to like speak to, you know, an RTS fan. Like, StarCraft II is sort of like low key one of my favorite games ever. So, you know, excited to have them keeping that torch alive.
Stormgate's Kickstarter is still going for 20 more days. Their goal was $100,000, but they've raised $1.8 million.
Yeah, although those goals are kind of fake, right? Like, they're obviously hoping to raise a lot more money than that. And the other one, I mean, I don't know, there's a lot of games I could shout out, but the other one that I specifically wanted to shout out was Avowed. So that's the first person sort of Skyrim like from Obsidian. And like, that was shown off. It wasn't the Game Awards. It was the Summer Microsoft's Game Fest.
Summer Gaming. Summer
whatever Fest. It was.
Summer Fest, yeah.
And like, it did not look very good. Like, it was not a very good trailer. But I mean, Obsidian makes some of the best role-playing games ever made. Avowed is set in the world of the same world as Pillars of Eternity. And I'm actually pretty invested in that lore and the world building that they've put into that. I think it's a really like, you know, well thought out sort of original fantasy realm and, you know, a higher budget first person RPG from Obsidian set in that world. Like, it looks perfect. And I'm willing to kind of chalk up last summer's, you know, marketing beat to just a little bit of a misfire there. So really excited.
Are you a Path of Exile guy? Would you play Path of Exile 2? That's out this year.
I did play the original Path of Exile. I mean, I would play the original, the sequel. It's a little bit, Path of Exile is a live service game that just kind of is ongoing and has more seasons and they add new stuff to it. And so I have to confess that I'm not super up on Path of Exile 2, but I don't know why. What makes it's like making EverQuest 2 when they're still updating EverQuest 1 a little bit. Like, I'm not quite sure what makes it sequel worthy versus just a big sizable update to the original.
Well, good news, Justin. Next week at the Xbox Developer Direct, we're also going to see more of Avowed.
Yay.
Along with Hellblade 2.
You know what else I'd like to play this year, but I don't think it's going to be out, but maybe it will be, is Skate.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
forgot about that.
It's definitely on my want list. And I don't know, like, they've had a decent amount of time to work on that since it was just a logo. So maybe we get a skate game.
None of us, Big Tony style, mentioned it. None of us mentioned Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Like, I think that remake, I never finished it. I want to get back to it. But it's like, it was so well done. And I think it's doing the most clever, exciting thing with its narrative that, you know, even though it's been years, I still don't want to spoil for people. That makes me so much more excited about Remake Part 2 or, you know, Rebirth than I would have been otherwise if it was just kind of a straight up remake.
Okay, we have a couple extracurricular activity items. We now know who will be playing Abby in The Last of Us Season 2. And it is an actress I know that Sam likes a lot, Caitlin Dever from Booksmart, and also the recent No One Will Save You.
Yeah, which I think I might be watching that this weekend, actually. I'm really excited to do that. It's been on my list all winter break, and I haven't been able to watch yet.
Yeah. Interesting choice.
Great. I mean, Booksmart is amazing, though.
Interesting choice.
It is, yeah. She's
a very cool actress, but kind of a slight build compared to Abby. And, of course, actors can, like, get fit for roles, of course. But Abby's more than just, like, fit, right? Like, she's like a bodybuilder.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that Caitlin, you know, Caitlin Dever, she's an amazing actress, right? Like, so well cast and absolutely has the intensity and the chops to pull off Abby, right? I've seen some legitimate criticism about, like, kind of like body diversity, and maybe the team should have worked a little bit harder to like find someone that sort of has that imposing physical presence that Abby has in the game. But you know, look, that's a valid perspective if that's someone's perspective. But I'll say for me personally, when I saw the casting news, I'm like, oh my God, it just makes me so excited. Yeah, for season
I'm excited
two
for the
show.
Actress. I don't know. I do think like that part of Abby is important because she's like, she's fueled by hatred and revenge, and she spends years pumping that into her muscles so that when the day comes, spoilers, when the day comes, she can kill a man, you know, with her body, and her body is like a physical manifestation of her hatred. So I feel like it's a little bit important.
Yeah, I agree.
Maybe people knew more about this than I did, but I didn't know this season was going to go like basically follow the plot of Last of Us 2. Like I thought they might write some extra stuff and like do some in between and stuff, because I don't, Last of Us 2 has like a huge like time jump and like, I mean, I don't, not in years. Well, yeah, it does actually at one point, but you know, I don't know. It just, it seems like, it seemed weird to do this season right after the last season, instead of having like, I don't know, some like interim Joel and Ellie stories or something.
Well, I agree. And the other reason, this is sort of outside of the fiction of The Last of Us, but just, you know, as someone that cares about the industry, the interesting part of it is like the rumor, the strong rumor is that Naughty Dog is working on Last of Us 3, right? Like that's that
would sync up with this TV season.
Well, but it doesn't, right? Because they're not stretching it out, because they're just jumping right to The Last of Us 2. That's the part of it that I find so fascinating. It's like, how are they... You know, like they're going to get ahead of themselves. They're going to have a Game of Thrones like situation, right? Yeah. Where like, you know, the season's...
Unless they're like sure that they're going to do Last of Us 3 like next January or something, a year from now, and then the season comes out after that.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe it'll sync up perfectly, right? It's like Last of Us 3 is, you know, 2 to 3 years away, and then season 3 of the show is 2 to 3 years away, and maybe it will be perfect actually. But it's like the show is a critical and commercial overwhelming success, won a million awards. Yeah. Like
the pressure to keep making that show is big, right?
Yeah.
Plus, it has child actors and young actors, and like when that happens, you got to like keep the ball rolling.
Yeah, and so I guess like if there's not a Last of Us 3 in development, and they're not going to try to sync up season 3 of the show with it, and the fact that they are doing Last of Us 2 with season 2 of the show, that would mean that the show is done, right? It's 2 seasons and done. Yeah. So that's just kind of interesting to me that they're not trying to do a little more.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how it turns out. I think the showrunners...
Did you see that news this week about how the Game of Thrones showrunners just completely don't watch Game of Thrones and don't care anymore and don't want their name associated with it? Wow.
I don't know.
They made that last season. They might as well own it.
So they had that interview with the Hollywood Reporter. It was like their first interview. They speak out for the first time since the end of Game of Thrones, but they don't really... Yeah. They don't address any of the controversy around the end of Game of Thrones.
No, I'm going to keep my mouth shut.
I did think it was neat that one of them rewatched the entirety of Game of Thrones with his family. I was like, that'd be pretty fun. You have your dad being like, yeah, and this part was crazy because it was really cold that day. Like, shut up, Dad.
Well, speaking of, I guess you didn't mention Star Wars, but they were attached to a Star Wars movie at one point. And speaking of Star Wars, we're going to get to see Mandalorian and Grogu. A terribly clever title for what is the absolute safest bet Disney could possibly make for the next Star Wars movie.
I mean, I think I've seen some speculation that I think is plausible that, you know, because there was a writer's strike and because there was an actor's strike, like some of the Star Wars movies, like the Rey movie and some of the other movies aren't ready, right? Like they're going to take another year. And so I've heard that, you know, Jon Favreau is a Disney company man at this point, does a lot of stuff with them, that the next season of The Mandalorian was turned into, like, let's make it a movie, and then, like, you know, let's get Star Wars back in theaters, right? Like, so this was a little bit of a not like a panic move, but like a plan B on their part, which, you know, is that true or not? Like, that's fan fiction on my part, but it makes sense.
Well, yeah, it's also true that these characters are like some of the only parts of Star Wars that people like that Disney has done, right?
So. Do you think they'll just cram this movie with like CG young Skywalker stuff? Yes. I mean, you know, like the whole movie is just going to be like our favorite Star Wars characters, like the show's been.
Yeah, and I don't know that
it's going to be all.
I don't know that I'm bothered by that. Maybe the idea of seeing Luke Skywalker on the big screen again is just too cool for me to.
Yeah, I know.
To crap on it.
Well, that's the thing. That's what would make this big screen worthy to me, sadly, is that they would have to like fan service up like something that big. Because otherwise, it's just going to be like, oh, they're fighting a bad Mandalorian in dark armor or something. Like, who cares? Like, there has to be a reason why this is a big screen instead of a TV show.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be all member berries. That's all it's going to be. And Damon, you just saw Luke Skywalker on the big screen in the last two Star Wars movies that came out. Like,
yeah, but that was a terrible depiction of this character. Like, it was so much cooler when he shows up in the Mandalorian. It was like, yes.
In an X-Wing.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was great.
It is really cool at the end of the second season.
Yeah.
I don't dislike The Mandalorian, but I've never back from season one liked it as much as other people do. I think the show is, you know, kind of cheesy, and I like when it's pulpy and weird, and you know, Mandalorian is getting jobbed on by Jawas and isn't very good at this, frankly. Like, you know, and then the whole episode is him fighting some weird beast, and like the show is just not that anymore. It's done. Yeah. It's gone the exact opposite direction of what I wanted, of like tying it into Ahsoka and this like deep lore, and Din Djarin is like this major player now with a Jedi. And I'm like, I didn't want that. I wanted him just like putzing around and just getting into trouble.
Yeah.
Well, then he shouldn't have ever found that baby Yoda.
Well, and then they got rid of him, and then someone at Disney was like, no, you can't. You get it. You gotta bring back.
But that's what I think. I think Grogu is like the most interesting.
Go pick the baby up.
The most interesting character of all this. Like, he's a young 50-year-old young Jedi who can't even talk yet, but has Jedi powers now. In a time when there's supposed to be no Jedis left, even though we keep finding more and more Jedis everywhere.
Yeah.
I think he's like one of Jedi the most
freaking everywhere. Yeah.
Grogu is one of the most interesting characters to like explore. I'm gonna, wait, when is Grogu? When does that species learn to talk? Why can't he talk?
Mm-hmm.
You know that there. So this is, you know. So we don't know. Like, the Mandalorian eventually, maybe in this movie, will answer why Grogu is not in the sequel trilogy. Right? Like, he's off. Whatever. You know, he's doing something. You know, yeah. but within our lifetime, we will see grown Grogu, you know, starring in a series of movies or TV shows that push the Star Wars timeline forward past the sequel trilogy. Right?
Grogu had to meditate for 30 years. That's what a species does. What they do.
Yep. That's right? Exactly.
And then when they're 80, they have their first word.
Yep. You're right. Except it's going to be 200 years. And then that'll be the basis of like, you know, Star Wars stuff set in the distant future. And like, I'm actually fine with that. Right. Like, that's a good way to tie the old with the new, like, you know, and then we'll get to see him. There's just like, I'm so tickled, and I like Star Wars, but like, I'm so tickled. It's so, just like childish, and like, you, like adults, there were teams of people at Disney that had to get in a room and discuss, like, look, does Grogu talk like Yoda? Is that something their species does? Or is that just a Yoda thing? And like, people had to weigh in on like what they thought the answer to that question was.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see. I have become cynical about the Star Wars movies because so many have been announced that just don't go anywhere. But since Jon Favreau is attached to this one, that's probably a good sign.
It's going to happen.
It'll probably be the next Star Wars movie that's in theaters. And that brings us to Video Game 20 Questions. Our suggestion this week comes from someone who did not provide their name, but they are the host of another video game show. It's not a podcast, obviously, but some type of video game show called Video Games VDGMS, videogames.com. You can check that out. And the host of that show provides this week's selection. So with that, let the questioning begin.
Did you say videogames.com? I was very confused by what just happened.
But it's spelled VDGMS.
Okay. Yeah, get the vowels out of there.
Yeah, get out of here, vowels.
Mm-hmm. Like flicker. Okay, let the question begin. Did this game come out in the 70s, 80s, or 90s?
No.
We have to mention Prince of Persia every week. let's see. Did this game come out on a cartridge format?
Yes. Well, hold on. Let's see.
This cannot be possibly this confusing.
It totally
either can. It either came out on a cartridge that tastes bad or a cartridge that didn't.
I mean, you know, any cartridge can taste bad.
It's true. It's true. None of them taste good, probably, right?
No.
One more. What?
Sega. Our cartridges taste good, not like Nintendo's.
The fact that Damon can't Google the answer to whether this game came out of cartridge tells me that it might be a little bit obscure.
Okay, I have the answer. This game was not released on a cartridge. Hmm.
Okay. So, is it an indie game?
No.
Was this game... the cartridge thing, what maybe trips me up is that maybe it's like a digital release and then Damon had to look up, did it ever get a limited run, like physical release, like a limited run Switch release or something like that. Damon, is this game most commonly considered, you know, a digital download game?
Yes.
Cool. Is this game on Steam?
Yes. That's 5.
I think it's Vampire Survivors.
Was it developed in Japan?
Yes.
It's not Vampire Survivors. That was developed.
Walking back.
I'll ask it again. Was it developed in Japan? That's only one question.
Vampire Survivors was developed in Italy, if anyone's curious.
Was it really?
It was a single guy. I mean, he's got a whole studio.
I didn't know.
Now,
okay. Sorry.
That's cool.
Was it?
I love Italy.
Was it developed in Japan? No.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Damon, are you sure you know what this game is?
Is that your question?
That's... No.
No.
Okay, so wait. So what do we know? We know that it's primarily considered a digital download. It's not available on a cartridge. Came out after the 90s.
Yeah, and we know the very simplest questions are tripping up Damon.
And was not made in Japan. Was this game developed in Europe?
No.
Okay. It's not Vampire Survivors, everybody.
Was it developed in the North American continent?
Yes.
Okay. Cool. If it was an Asian game, it would be actually easier for us to get, but this actually makes it more difficult.
Yeah. And we do know a key. So Damon said it's not an indie game, even though it is like a digital, you know, like a smaller digital release, but not an indie. So that's kind of notable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is this game available on the Nintendo Switch?
No.
It's not. Is it a console exclusive? No, we shouldn't ask that because it was on Steam, right?
Yeah.
So it could still be a console exclusive.
Could
be. Do we need to know that?
I don't know. We don't even know. We need to narrow down. We're in a 23-year time span right now which it could be released. So it would be helpful to narrow that down a little.
And you just got rid of Switch, right? So, but it has to be from when did Steam come out? We know that. That's good.
Oh well,
no, because that Steam can reach back further.
Steam, it's not Steam. Helpful. Steam launched with like Half-Life 2, but I don't know when it became like the Steam that it is now. Slowly over time.
Did this game come out after 2010?
Yes. And that's 10.
Okay. So pretty modern. Was this game made by Ubisoft, EA, or Activision?
No.
It might be published by a Japanese company and developed in the United States. That's why you had to look it up. What do you think?
Yeah, that seems very plausible. Could be Square Enix, you know, could be something like that. Some kind of, it could be like Tomb Raider, Guardian of Light, those isometric Tomb Raiders that they made, or Hitman Go, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Those were published by Square Enix.
Yeah, and there's Capcom games, I think.
Yeah. Is this game part of a series?
Yes.
Part of a franchise? Is it part of a franchise?
Yes.
Okay, so maybe we're zeroing in. I'm really thrown off. I'm like fixated on it not being an indie game. but then still being kind of like download first. So that's why I'm oriented around like those Hitman Go, you know, style games.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Those kind of like, downloadable spin-offs.
What would cause them not to do a full release, right? Maybe it's like very online focused. What if it's a mobile game?
That's what I was thinking. Was this game released for like on app stores?
Yes.
Ooh, we solved the puzzle.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of. I mean, we're getting there. We're getting there. Mm-hmm. But not made by Ubisoft, EA, Activision. That does kind of point to, you know, Hitman Go, I forget the Tomb Raider. Was it Guardian of Light?
Yeah, it was called? It wouldn't be like a big one like Rovio or something, because those are all Europe, right? Minecraft, Birds.
Rovio is Europe. Mojang is Europe.
Mm-hmm. What about like, King? Where are they?
That's a good question. I don't know where King's
like
headquarters
Sweden
are.
Or something like that?
Candy Crush. But Damon did say it's part of a series.
Mm-hmm. Does this game have microtransactions?
I don't think so. Not notable. It's not like built around that.
Really? Should we narrow it to puzzle game?
Yeah, I think it's one of the... Well, the only thing is Tomb Raider Guardian of Light is not necessarily a puzzle game. It's just kind of like isometric exploring tombs.
Yeah.
Hitman Go, those were like puzzle games.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those. Are those all Square Enix? Is that all them?
Seems like it.
Yeah, was this game published by Square Enix?
Yes, that's 15.
Hey, this game in the Tomb Raider franchise?
No.
Okay. That's good. So that leaves us with... I know there were more. There was Hitman Go, and there were others. I think they even made like a Deus Ex one, didn't they?
Whoa, really?
I think so, but I can't remember. Hitman Go was the one that really caught on. Do you play as a bald hitman in this game?
Yes.
Is it Hitman Go?
Yes, Hitman Go.
Nailed it. Man, you led that one, Justin. That was
18th
great.
18th question.
Woof. That seems like a really hard one for us to get, but we got Mr. Mobile.
So it was released on iOS in 2014, then came to PC in 2015, then it came to PS4 and Vita in 2016. So I wasn't sure if it was released on cartridge for the Vita, but it wasn't. Download only.
Yeah. Is this really not on Switch?
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Interesting.
It hasn't been released anywhere since 2016. And it's a good game, too. And they did a Deus Ex one. I feel like they did a Tomb Raider or a Lara Croft one, too. Lara Croft
Go. They did. Yeah, they did. And then, yeah, it's not Tomb Raider Guardian of Light, is it? It's Lara Croft Guardian of Light, and they made a sequel to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hitman Go was really good, and they did a really clever watching footage of it here. Like, the sort of board gamey, you know, tilt-shifted aesthetic was, like, so smart.
Mm-hmm.
I have never seen footage of this game. I had no idea it was so stylized and that it was, like, game pieces.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's great. And like when you move, the enemies move. And so it is, I mean, it's like, it's got the vibe of like a puzzle game. It's really well done.
And it was developed by Square Enix Montreal. That's why I snap writ
North
said
America.
Yes when you said it was developed in Japan. And then I had to correct myself. Developed in Montreal.
Got it. Yeah.
I wonder like, what other Go games? I'm gonna look it up real quick. Then we can close out the episode.
But Tomb Raider Go wasn't like, it was just like an action game, right? An isometric action game.
No, it was
no. That was the same as this.
Really, it was like the snap. Lara Croft Go. Path?
Yeah, so they did a Tomb Raider one, Lara Croft Go. You're right, Damon. I'm just on Wikipedia now, and then maybe I dreamed the Deus Ex one. Although I thought they made one.
No, I think they did a Deus Ex one too. But maybe it wasn't called.
Oh yeah, you're right. Yeah, it was Deus Ex Go.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. Cool. Well, we solved it.
Yeah, this Tomb Raider game is an action game. You like actually, right? Like,
but no, because they made Lara Croft Guardian of Light is what you're thinking of,
which was the same
isometric viewpoint, and it's actually that one's actually really good too.
Yep.
Where it feels like a Tomb Raider game, solving puzzles, you know, fighting things, you know, exploring tombs, but just from an isometric viewpoint. Whereas this was a puzzle game, Lara Croft Go.
Okay. Neat.
Yeah.
Those games are
and then they
cool.
made a they made a cool. they made a Guardian of Light sequel too that I can't remember the name of.
Well, thank you for the suggestion. Videogames.com.
What year was that game?
Which release? Originally in 2014.
2014. Okay, so they're not. So the Go series is kind of dead now.
That yeah, sounds like and I think the Deus Ex one has even been delisted.
Ah, okay. Bummer. Deals.
Yeah, bummer.
Yeah.
Looks like a good idea.
Yeah.
But nicely job, yeah. Viewers, listeners, if you have your own suggestions for 20 questions, email them to me at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. And that is all the scoops that we have for you this week. Thank you to both Sam and Justin. Thank you to Jobert and Marian working behind the scenes to make this episode possible. I'm going to go play some more Prince of Persia, Lost Crown tonight. And I recommend everyone else out there to do too. Next week, when this the episode after this one comes out on January 18th, when we'll be able to talk about all that fun Xbox stuff too. So please be excited. My name is Damon, this is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
I honestly can't believe we got that 20 questions.
Yeah.
That was amazing. Well done, Justin. That was really impressive.
Thanks. IGN
I think
gave
you said it like question six or something.
Yeah, you said it early on.
Oh, is that really true?
Yeah, just like much earlier than we got to it. It was really cool.
We gave Hitman Go an 8.2.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.